If you are American, you've probably heard this kind of argument in many shapes and forms over dinner tables and on TV shows and the media and elsewhere many times over. Yeah, buddy. Those Europeans, we've had to save them twice. We've had to save their asses in both WW1 and WW2. Don't even get me started, buddy, on those cheese-eating surrender monkeys, the French. Might as well get rid of the blue and red so they could have an actually honest national flag. And damn, those ungrateful two feminine Europeans freeloading off our military and the freedom we provide. USA, USA, USA. Am I right, buddy? Anyone? Anyone? Well, given the endless news on military buildups in Europe being long overdue and the new global security architecture being hammered out in our emerging multipolar world, I thought it would be good to take a look at this assumption as we are now on the cusp of 2026. For decades, our political and media elite have promulgated a reassuring fiction that our tax dollars are lavishly subsidizing the defense of a parasitical Europe. This narrative is viscerally gratifying, yet profoundly fallacious, one deliberately crafted to obscure the broader verities of our global military disposition. Nearly a century ago, Major General Smedley D. Butler, retired Marine Corps officer, double Medal of Honor recipient, and among the most decorated Marines in history, delivered a seminal address and authored the book War is a Racket. He asserted that war is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. Butler admitted that over his 33 years of service, he functioned chiefly as, quote, high-class muscle for big business, for Wall Street, and for bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. Closed quote. Reflecting on corporate protection expeditions, he noted that, quote, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents. And this same racket persists today. When looking at Europe, in truth, we do not subsidize European defense. We're not engaged in philanthropy. We are perpetuating an empire, and empires are exorbitantly costly. We sustain approximately 750 military installations across more than 80 nations, an expansive network of forward deployment centers and carrier strike groups that form the bedrock of a worldwide security apparatus advancing American imperatives. And these imperatives include the safeguarding of maritime corridors, preserving dollar hegemony, shielding supply chains, and guaranteeing rapid global power projection. And please let us dispense with the self-deception. These garrisons are not meant primarily to shield American citizens or provide security for the homeland. They are the tissue of imperial hegemony, sustained by the pretense of global equilibrium. When we disseminate militarism, it's cloaked as the rules-based order. When our perceived adversaries expand their influence, it's branded aggression. This is not defense. It's a predatory racket masquerading as righteousness, perpetuating conflicts while serving defense conglomerates and corrupt officials. It should be said that America's extraordinary prosperity is tethered to this capacity, and Washington's embrace of this role is because of the dividends it provides: geostrategic leverage, economic primacy, and petrodollar supremacy. And let's be clear, no organization, no power compelled America to do this, to take up this mantle. This is no altruistic gesture toward the world or Europe in particular. In fact, since September 11th, 2001 alone, over $8 trillion have gone up in smoke, channeled to major arms manufacturers like Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and Northrop Grumman. Their lobbyists craft legislation, their largesse inundates Congress, and the martial apparatus advances propelled by influence peddling, jingoistic patriotism, and carnage. American leaders, and presidents for that matter, no matter which side of the aisle, continue to approve more bases, more weapons, and more war. Not for so-called freedom, but for profit. Financial interests gain, the defense industry thrives, and the rest of the world bears the cost. And this system shows no sign of slowing down. Just days ago, President Trump announced plans for a new Trump class of battleships aiming for 20 to 25 in total, and that these massive surface warships, described as the largest and most powerful ever built, will be equipped with hypersonic weapons, direct energy systems, railguns, and nuclear-capable cruise missiles. And this program is presented as a return to naval supremacy, if America ever lost that naval supremacy. I have yet to hear of it. Yet, in an era dominated by drone swarms, hypersonic anti-ship missiles, and low-cost unmanned systems, these giant platforms appear to be vulnerable, high-value targets, and that by building them, they will benefit contractors rather than address the demands of modern warfare. And this is just simply another clear example of the racket that Butler described. And moreover, it's exactly this kind of extended power projection supported by our global network of bases that such large warships were meant to strengthen. Our bases in Europe, for instance, are not primarily there to protect Germany or to protect France or to protect the UK from direct threats. They serve as vital logistic centers for operations across the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. Ramstein Air Base, for example, allows rapid movement of troops and equipment to Africa and the Middle East far more efficiently than shipping everything across the Atlantic. These facilities support command and control, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, drone operations, medical evacuation, and troop rotation. Rebuilding equivalent infrastructure at home would cost far more and without the same valuable Eurasian geography. Moreover, studies consistently find that forward basing with allies is usually cheaper and more effective than constant rotation from the continental United States. And for Europe, well, host nations provide significant support. Free land, waived taxes and fees, and shared funding for infrastructure amounting to billions in direct and in-kind contributions. NATO standards also favor American equipment, making Europe a major market for our defense exports, with revenue returning to the United States. Moreover, and this should not be forgotten, Article 5 was invoked only once, not for Europe, but for the US after September 11th, and European allies fought in this military adventure in Afghanistan for nearly two decades and paying over 1,000 lives for American delusions surrounding nation building in that area of the world. The United States maintains the world's largest military budget by a wide margin and justifies it via perpetual threat narratives. Moreover, I think many Americans have grown weary of endless enemies at the gate, rhetoric like fighting China over Taiwan so we don't have to fight them here, as if that scenario would ever be remotely plausible. Threat inflation extends even to minor nations. And now, seriously, Venezuela? Venezuela, why? What vital interests could possibly justify regime change efforts or military posturing there? And what about the jingoism of the former Biden administration, recently thankfully snuffed out by President Trump, but sadly continued by the nations of the EU, fearing their own irrelevance? That if Russia is not stopped in the proxy war currently taking place in Ukraine, that their armies of darkness will move to conquer all of Europe. All this is more threat inflation. And now getting back to the original thesis of this video, yes, many European countries do spend less on defense than their wealth would suggest, and discussions about so-called fair burden sharing are valid. But the claim of a freeloading Europe is a deliberate distraction pushed by the same leaders who resist close examination of the scale, structure, and true purpose of America's defense spending. It keeps attention away from the real issue, an imperial system that concentrates wealth in the hands of a few, while the costs in money and lives are borne by the many. As so eloquently put a century ago, by Major General Smedley D. Butler. So what do you think? Leave me your thoughts in the comment section below. It'd be very much appreciated. Also check to see that you are still subscribed to this channel, as many, many thousands of people have been unsubscribed without their knowledge or consent by YouTube. With that said, thank you very much again for watching, and I will see you in the next video. Bye for now.